Europe is dying, but not from external invasion. Its death comes from within, a strange, self-inflicted demise driven by two simultaneous forces, unprecedented mass migration and a profound loss of faith in European civilization itself. Since its 2017 publication, Douglas Murray's haunting analysis has become required reading for political leaders across the Western world, from Viktor Orban to Jordan Peterson. The book struck such a nerve that Murray required security protection after its release, yet it has sold over 1 million copies worldwide. Why? Because it dares to ask the most uncomfortable question of our time. Can a civilization survive when it has lost faith in itself? As Europe faces what Murray calls civilizational exhaustion, we're witnessing in real time whether a culture can continue when its people no longer believe in their own story. In 1990, predicting white Britons would become a London minority within 2 decades seemed like racist fear-mongering. Yet by 2011, census data confirmed this reality. Only 44.9% of London residents identified as white British, with 3 million people living in households where English wasn't the primary language. This pattern spread across Western Europe after World War II. Countries established guest worker programs to address labor shortages, drawing from Turkey, North Africa, and former colonies. The crucial mistake was expecting these workers to return home. Instead, attracted by better living standards and social benefits, they settled permanently. Politicians consistently talked tough on immigration while implementing few actual controls. When Enoch Powell warned about immigration's consequences in his 1968 Rivers of Blood speech, he was immediately sacked, despite 75% of Britons agreeing with him. By the 1990s, Tony Blair's government abandoned previous restraint, opening borders widely. They predicted 13,000 annual arrivals from new EU countries. Instead, Eastern Europeans in Britain increased from 170,000 in 2004 to 1.24 million by 2013. Have you noticed how the justifications for mass migration keep changing? When one argument fails, another quickly replaces it. If immigration doesn't make you richer, it supposedly enriches your culture. If not that, then it strengthens your economy. Despite claims of economic benefits, University College London research shows non-EEA migrants between 1995-2011 cost the UK 114 to 159 billion more in services than they paid in taxes. When economic arguments falter, advocates pivot to the aging population justification, claiming Europe needs young immigrants to support elderly Europeans. Yet this creates a pyramid scheme, as immigrants also age and require support. When economic arguments fail, the narrative shifts to cultural enrichment, assuming permanent relocation is better than travel and that benefits increase with numbers. The final justification is fatalism. Migration is simply inevitable. This argument collapses when examining Japan, which maintains strict immigration policies despite being the world's third largest economy. People choose Europe not just for wealth, but for its generous welfare states and likelihood of being allowed to stay. Throughout the 2000s, Italy's Lampedusa served as the main entry point for African and Middle Eastern migrants. Following the 2011 Arab Spring, arrivals surged to hundreds or thousands daily, predominantly young men. The situation escalated dramatically in 2015 when Chancellor Merkel declared "Wir schaffen das," we can do this, and announced Germany would accept unlimited migrants. The crisis gained emotional momentum when the photograph of 3-year-old Elon Kurdi's drowning circulated globally. Often overlooked was that the Kurdi family had left Turkey, a safe country where the father had employment, specifically seeking European residence. Greek islands bore the brunt. Lesbos's port of Mytilene received 8,000 migrants daily in 2015, with 20,000 refugees eventually camping on roundabouts and sidewalks. Only the 2016 EU-Turkey deal, providing Turkey 6 billion euros to control migration, reduced arrivals. Europe's borders had effectively disappeared through a single political decision. Ironically, Merkel herself had declared in 2010 that multiculturalism has utterly failed, acknowledging Germany's self-deception about guest workers, a sentiment shared by British and French leaders. Summer 2016 saw near-daily attacks across Europe. After the Nice truck attack killing 86 people, came multiple incidents. A teenage asylum seeker attacking train passengers in Bavaria, a Syrian killing a pregnant woman in Stuttgart, another Syrian bombing a wine bar in Ansbach, and two men murdering Father Jacques Hamel during Mass in Rouen. Simultaneously, Europe faced widespread sexual assaults by immigrant men against local women, an issue authorities avoided addressing for fear of appearing racist. Only after the 2015 New Year's Eve attacks in Cologne, where approximately 2,000 men assaulted 1,200 women, did the problem become undeniable, though police initially concealed perpetrators' identities. Throughout 2016, sexual assaults continued while officials suppressed crime data involving migrant suspects. Anti-racism groups pressured police to remove racial identifiers from suspect descriptions. Some victims even hid their attackers' backgrounds, like a Mannheim rape victim who falsely claimed German attackers to avoid fueling aggressive racism, reflecting a society so consumed by historical guilt it had become incapable of self-defense. Europe suffers from Geschichtsmüde, weary of history, a societal exhaustion. We live among Christianity's physical and moral debris, with cathedrals like Notre Dame standing as tourist attractions rather than pilgrimage sites, their spiritual meaning lost. This creates uncertainty about European values. Post-war human rights culture attempts to implement a secular version of Christian conscience but lacks secure foundations. As human rights rhetoric expands, its failure to deliver becomes more apparent. Philosopher Chantal Delsol compares modern Europeans to Icarus surviving the fall. Having repeatedly crashed after attempting to reach the sun, we exist dazed amid the wreckage of failed dreams and ideologies. We avoid existential questions because we no longer believe in answers. Yet, with the arrival of people holding different attitudes toward life's purpose, these questions demand attention. Nature abhors a vacuum. The fundamental question remains, if our freedoms arise from abandoned beliefs, can European civilization survive when Europeans no longer believe in it? By mid-century, China and India will retain their cultural identities, while Western Europe will resemble a large-scale United Nations. European culture may survive only in rural areas and among the wealthy, as native Europeans become minorities in their ancestral homelands and face criticism of their traditions. The Vienna Institute of Demography's projection that most Austrians under 15 will be Muslim by mid-century illustrates this transformation, occurring under the premise that European cultures are somehow inferior, while promoting a diversity that paradoxically reduces diversity. Immigration has transformed international politics into domestic concerns, limiting Europe's global influence. A leaked British Ministry of Defense report noted military intervention becomes difficult in multicultural Britain, where deploying troops to countries from which UK citizens, where their families come, lack support. Michel Houellebecq's novel Submission envisions France under Islamic rule after mainstream parties back an Islamist candidate to block nationalists. The protagonist contemplates converting to Islam for practical benefits in a society primed for submission. Europe's survival depends on what happens when a civilization that has lost faith in itself confronts forces that haven't, a strange death occurring not through invasion, but through civilizational exhaustion.